Okay, today we're going to talk about personal responsibility. And of course, I'm once again going to start with politics and football. Okay? When personal responsibility, and if something looks bad and smells bad, then it usually is bad, if you know what I'm saying. Meaning if you look like you're doing something and you're acting like you're doing something, even if you deny that you're doing something, it's very hard to convince everybody else that you're not doing it is what they think that you're doing. Okay, and of course I'm referring to our good friends in Iran who say, no, chas v'shalom, we're not building nuclear weapons, and the world likes to say...
What? When you see a God or a God doing something which... Like they weren't supposed to be done in Kafskut, that even though...
What's a gadol hador? I wouldn't throw the term around too lightly. When you see, there's a difference between a rabbi appointed to a position and someone who's a gadol hador. What?
Okay, not a gadol hador.
Right.
A rabbi in a very prominent public position.
Yeah, it's sad. It's very disappointing.
Doing something or saying something controversial.
Yeah.
Then one is supposed to be done the kafskut.
I would say that person should at least, for sure, enjoy the benefit of the doubt until you know otherwise. I would say that. That's definitely true. Why not? More than anybody else? You should be on the kafskut. Now, if it turns out that's true, the sad part is it's a greater chilul Hashem than just a regular person. It's sad. It's very disappointing. Okay, so we're going to talk about that. What happens when what you're doing, is it, well, we'll see, is it what we think it is? Turn to Parak Mem Bet, chapter 42. We're going to talk about Yosef and his initial meeting with Yosef and his initial meeting with his brothers. The paper doesn't have anything. Chapter 42, Parak Mem Bet in Miketz. As we know, there's a famine. We're skipping the part with the dreams, and Yosef is appointed to the viceroy, and they have the seven. Bless you. The seven lean years, seven plenty years, and then the seven lean years. Okay, and now they ran out of food in Canaan, and now they have to go down to Egypt to get food. Vayar Yaakov ki yesh shever b'mitzrayim. Yaakov saw that there is shever, there is produce in Egypt. Vayom Yaakov levanav lama tidrav. But why should you? Did you fear? Vayom in this v'hinei shamati sheyesh shever ki yesh shever b'mitzrayim. Redu shama. And he says, I heard that there is foodstuffs in Egypt. Go there, go down there, get for us, and we'll die, we'll live and not die. Vayirdu achei Yosef asara lishbor bar b'mitzrayim. Okay. The brothers of Yosef, 10, went lishbor bar b'mitzrayim. Shever, the word shever means?
Break.
It means break, but in here it means in this context?
Like foodstuffs.
Foodstuff, produce, shever, right. It's interesting. So someone who's into Hebrew language and linguistics would want to know why is shever a reference to produce, but it clearly is here. Lishbor bar.
We talk about it with eating also, to break bread.
Right, we do say that.
I mean, we don't. we don't really speak English. Right.
We don't talk about it with, regard to produce. So anyway, fine. Ve'et Binyamin achi Yosef lo shalach Yaakov et echav. Ki amar pen yikre'enu ason. And Binyamin, the brother of Yosef, he did not send, because he said, lest an ason happen to him. Lest a calamity befall Binyamin. Which, the whole thing is strange. Okay, he sends all the brothers. Why does he send all the brothers? Why didn't he send two of them? How many brothers do you need to go buy food? That's one. Number two...
Schlepp back enough food.
What? I think they went by themselves.
Carts, wagons.
Yeah, they had their guys, their camels. Remember when Eliezer went, he had his 10 camels with him. So I don't think it was a problem of hiring truck drivers. Okay? It also says, Vayirdu Achei Yosef Asara. Why does it mention Asara? 10.
And it calls Achei Yosef Yosef.
And then it says, I didn't even notice that. Ve'et Binyamin Achei Yosef Lo Shalach Yaakov Et Echav. Okay, and when it mentions again the brothers of Yosef, why? Why did Yaakov say ki amar pen yikre'enu ason? What's going to happen to him?
You said that could happen to Yosef.
If you say that, what does that mean?
Which is to speak to the brothers.
Obviously, doesn't it? Like, oh, I'm going to send you all, but no, I'm going to keep Benjamin here. Why? Oh, no, no reason. I don't want anything to happen to him. What's going to happen to him? What? Benjamin? I'm not I don't know. Younger than the rest. Thank you. Okay. Look at... Okay.
Which could be old.
Look at Rashi. Look at Rashi. Pen yikre'enu ason. Ubebayit lo yikre'enu ason. And at home, nothing is going to happen to him. Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Mikan shehasatan mikatreg b'shat ha-sakana. From here we learn that the Satan accuses in a time of danger. What? What do you mean, oive?
I don't know. Satan, time of danger.
Yeah.
Heebie-jeebie.
Meaning, Satan mekatreg in time of danger to me means because in a time of danger you get more scared and naturally your emuna goes down and therefore that makes you more vulnerable to such attacks by the Satan.
Okay, let me ask you, you're the brothers of Yosef. Right? You, somehow now, fate has now prompted you to make your way down to Egypt. The last time you saw your long-lost brother who you sold into slavery, they were on their way to Egypt.
Yeah, but it was...
What do we think about their relationship with Yosef? Do we think that there's anything, that they have anything to do with Yosef?
No.
Do you think that they're... That, what?
No.
No, you think nothing. It's just irrelevant.
What do you mean they have anything to do with Yosef? Of course not.
Not that anything to do with Yosef. What I'm really asking is, and I'm obviously leading you to the answer, right? Do we think that once they said, you know, fate has now prompted us to make our way down to Egypt, and the last time we saw our brother, we were selling him down the river to Egypt.
So you're thinking they maybe have a chance to find him and bring him back?
I'm asking you.
No.
If anyone? Let's do a poll.
If they did.
Let's do a poll. No. Yes.
I don't think so. I think they think he's dead.
No, yeah, he's exactly. Dead. Why would they think he's dead?
They sold him.
Slavery.
Who survived slavery for so long?
How long has it been?
At least 14 years.
Okay, 14 years. Anyone? Anyone? Does anybody think that Yosef, that the brothers thought, maybe Yosef's still alive?
But why would they care?
Look what they did to him.
That would be why they wouldn't want to go down. Lama Titrao. Maybe that's Yaakov's little dig to them. Why are you so scared to go down to Mitzrayim where everybody knows the food is there? Why does Yaakov have to initiate? We know from the Dina Shechem thing that they are not people who are very shy to do what needs to be done. And here they're getting hungry, and these are grown men, and they need their father to suggest for them to go down to Mitzrayim. And the way he suggests them, Lama Titrao, why are you so scared to go down to Mitzrayim?
So they don't want to go.
What are you afraid of?
They don't want to go. What are they afraid of?
They're afraid of encountering.
They're afraid of their own
guilt. Afraid of?
Their own guilt.
Their own guilt.
They've been able to bury the story in their heads all this time by avoiding this big pink elephant.
That's a good Rashi. They're avoiding the big pink elephant. Look at Rashi. Rashi on Pasuk Gimel, Vayirdu Achei Yosef. Why are they all Achei Yosef? Velo Katav Bnei Yaakov, that's exactly what Rina said. Why doesn't he call them Bnei Yaakov? Melamed Shehayu Mitchartim B'Mechirato. They regretted selling him. V'natdu Libam Lihitnaheg Imo B'Achva. And they decided together, they had come to the conclusion that they would consider him like a brother, to treat him like a brother. V'lifdoto B'chol Makom Shifsiku Alayhem. They would pay whatever it costs to get him out, to redeem him. So Rashi doesn't agree with you.
So why didn't they go before?
Well, you know, what's we're going anyway, you know. That's a good question. Why didn't they go
suspicious.
Before? What?
It would look more suspicious.
Suspicious of what? If a bunch of brothers came down and said, we're looking
for
our brother?
His father doesn't know the truth. Their father doesn't
They'd have to admit to their father what they've done this way. It's kind of more...
Yeah, logic indicates, like you said, that they would not look for him. They're looking to bury him. You know what I'm saying? To bury the past. But... We're going to see, what is Rashi based upon? Why would Rashi say such a thing? Okay, what are the textual indications to indicate that they would feel that way? First of all, you have Achei Yosef, and it calls them Achei Yosef, Benjamin Achei Yosef, Achi Yosef, and Echab. Anyway, okay? Yeah?
No, I mean later when Yehuda pleads for, you know... pleads, and mm-hmm. he says, we've already lost the brother.
That's later on.
Right.
When the whole thing came out, the whole thing of the brother came out.
Right.
Is there intention going down to go find him? Is it? We're going to skip back to Pasuk K.
You can't say that their intention going down is to find him. Their intention going down is to get food. And are they also hoping to, piggyback on that?
Well, once we're there, why didn't they go look
their
for
intention,
him?
Their intention, you cannot say that they're drive and intention and focus is to find their brother.
I don't know. Vayavol b'nei Yisrael lishbor betoch habaim, ki haya ra'av ve'eretz Kanaan. The sons of Israel came lishbor to procure, I guess, to buy food. Betoch habaim. What does that mean? Betoch habaim.
Amongst all of those who were coming.
Amongst all those who were coming. Wouldn't it be obvious that they were coming amongst all those who were coming?
I mean, a lot of people were coming.
A lot of people were coming. But what does it mean? What is it telling us that they came amongst those who were coming?
There was
to hide.
And
what's that?
They tried to hide themselves.
Betoch habaim. Look at Rashi for a second. This Rashi is fascinating. Matminim atzmam shelo yikirum. Why? Stop here. Don't look ahead. Why? Why would they do that? Meaning they tried, the way we would say it today, they tried to blend in with everyone else. They didn't come as a group. Why not?
I want you to know they're Jews.
Interesting. They're not Jews. But right, why not?
They're different.
They don't understand us.
They're all Hebrews. They're all coming. Meaning, are they the only people that are coming to buy food?
Clearly not.
Okay. Right. So why wouldn't they? Why would they want to? Why would they separate? Why would they split up? Think. Why would you do that? If you said we have to go buy food, let's split up.
In case they're rations, maybe.
Good.
So if you're coming in as a group, then you can only get this much. But if you're coming as individuals, maybe.
Exactly what I thought. Two chicken limit at Rami Levy.
Right.
So you tell you this kid and that kid and that kid
one
and that
purchase.
Kid, right? And everybody, like, as I remember when we still like it's on Thanksgiving time in the United States, so they would give way back when they used to give free turkeys. Remember these free tickets?
It was free. You had to pay $500.
The kosher ones weren't free. The non-kosher were.
Yeah. What?
No, we got Empire. We got kosher Empire.
A certain amount of groceries. But you always bought like five times that amount of groceries. Right. So if we split it up, if I buy $100 and you buy $100, then we have turkey for the rest of the year. For the rest of the century, you know? You're all set with the turkey. As long as you have a big freezer.
And you like turkey.
And you like turkey.
Everyone has big freezers.
Anyway.
An extra freezer.
Everybody has an extra freezer. Okay. So, there's only one problem with that. How should we say this? Because we're Jews, we can say this, but what do we think of people who split up in order to do exactly that?
Smart.
Yeah, that's the word I was thinking of.
Trickery.
What?
Trickery.
It's all slimy, don't you think? What?
Sneaky.
Yeah. Of course, right. It's like, really? Here are the rules. Thank you. Yasher koach. Right, you know. And exactly the point. We can come up with a teretz for anything. Right? Okay.
Until we read this Rashi, I would have just thought that Ben Habaim meant proved exactly the opposite of your thesis, which is that there were a lot of people going down, and the real reason that they were going down was to get food, because
like everybody.
Oh, that's Ben Habaim. No, it says Lishbor. You could have read the pasuk Vayavo Bnei Yisrael Lishbor Ki Haya Ra'av Eretz Kanaan.
Right, but I. Meaning that, like, they were part of this, but everyone was doing it. It wasn't that they had some ulterior motive. It wasn't that they had some other reason to go down. Everybody had to go down to Egypt to get food.
Right.
But the Rashi
maybe there was already
that.
But what do you do with Betoch Habaim? Why would you add? Why is that important? It's obvious.
Maybe there was anti-Semitism.
Oh, against the idea they're going for their brother. They're just going because everyone's going. Okay. Let's finish the rest of Rashi now. Hold on a second.
Okay.
The friend of Rashi. Rashi says, "Matmini matzman shelo yikirum." He told them not to split. He told them to split to hide themselves. The fishes ivalehem avihem shelo yitreu kulam bepetach echad. Don't all show up in one petach. Hold on a sec. We'll see what that means. Elashi kanes kol echad bepitcho. Each one should enter in his petach, in his gate, according to the midrash. The midrash says, when the brothers came down, when they got to Egypt, when they got to wherever, like Alexandria, they split up.
Well, they were big and scary.
Each
also.
One entered right. in a different passport control into the city. They split up. They didn't come in together. Why? Look at Rashi. Kedei shelo tishlot behem ayin hara. So that ayin hara shouldn't befall them. Shekulam na'im mekulam giborim. These are big, tough guys. So right. If the Egyptians would see this band of
nice-looking big tough guys.
Maybe there's another reason. It's like some people, royalty don't travel all together. They split themselves up.
Why?
One of them gets killed, or one of the plane crash, or whatever, then at least there's other...
See, this Rashi is fascinating. It's actually based on the Midrash. The Rashi is fascinating because it very much, how shall I say, it seems very, reflects back on the Yaakov attitude that we spoke about 2 weeks ago. Right? How do Jews function outside of the land? What do we try to do?
Blend in.
We blend in. We don't want to stick out. We don't want to make waves. We don't want anybody to see us. We don't want to encourage people to whatever. Just blend in. You know, that's the way I read this Rashi. And I think I even saw, I think I saw somewhere. That he's like, yeah, this is the way that, I don't know where I saw it exactly. I saw some parshan that says that, like, this is the way we function. This is how the Jews function, you know, in the world, not to stick out. That's a very...
It's a fine line.
What?
It's
a very our grandparents' attitude. No? Yeah. Don't you say?
Mm-hmm.
Not to make waves, not to stick out. What's that? Much less so. Much less so. Really? You felt they don't make
our
waves?
Our parents,
stick,
grandparents.
Stick out?
I think it depends where you live.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think in other cities...
Let me put it this way. Like, when you look at history, you know, if you ever study a history of the Americans in the Holocaust, many Americans, there was a march in 1942, 3, whatever... Orthodox rabbis marched on Congress in order to try to protest the idea the United States wasn't doing anything to help the Jews. Many, many secular Jews were against the idea of the protest and actually took steps to try to prevent them from protesting.
You've spoken about this idea before.
For the same reason, because we don't want to stick out too much. Because it'll be worse. It'll be worse for us.
But that was also in Chicago, and they did that movie.
Skokie.
Yes. In Skokie,
yeah, you were just showing that. You were showing the kids that movie.
I was alone myself. It was like in the. It was after the war.
It was the night. It was the early 80s. No, it was the early
80s.
Yes, early
80s.
Oh my God.
And they wanted to march.
And the Nazis wanted to march in Skokie and the freedom of.
And the ADL said. The ADL said, "Just be quiet, shush, still. It'll go. It'll pass." That's what they said.
40 years after the Holocaust.
You should just know. It's interesting if you look at the history of it. This march was actually. It was initiated by. I don't remember his name. He had an Americanized name. He was actually the nephew of Rav Kook. Rav Kook's nephew went to America and he assimilated. Mm-hmm. But when this whole thing happened, he just couldn't take it. And he mobilized. He knew Yiddish. He spoke Yiddish. He spoke the language of all the Rabbanim. And he was the one that mobilized all the Rabbanim and had the political connections to make sure that the train didn't stop on the way and they were able to actually get to Union Station and walk from Union Station to the Capitol.
How do you know this?
I did research on it.
The nephew of Rav Kook was a neo-Nazi.
No.
I know, I also thought
he
said that.
Yeah, do a Google search. Wikipedia, the march on, the Rabbi's March on. Search for it. You see Rabbi's March on Washington in 1942, 44.
I know, I also.
You know what I'm saying? It was only Orthodox rabbis. It's a fascinating story. Really, really fascinating story. Okay, what? 400 rabbis. So there's a picture of them all standing on the Capitol steps.
Okay. I was saying it's a fine line because if you blend in, sometimes you forget what the blend is and you lose who you are.
Ah, that's definitely true. That's also true. But this is not the idea. The idea is to maintain your identity, but you don't want to stick out too much. Because, you know, the guy who's had six across...
Wear the baseball cap and not the keeper.
Exactly. Exactly.
Like in Europe, they wear those caps.
Exactly. So that's exactly what Rashi says. Kedesh lotishlat behem ayin hara. You found it? Working this internet today. Okay, so the Ayin Hara wouldn't rule on. That's what Ayin Hara. What is Ayin Hara? We've spoken about this. Ayin Hara isn't some heebie-jeebie. Ayin Hara is people look at you and notice you because you stick out. They notice your beautiful car and they're like, oh, I can't believe you have this beautiful car. Or, you know what I'm saying? And then they're jealous of you and they invoke all kinds of spiritual things. So if you don't want to stick out, there is an idea of not sticking out. Okay? Which do you find more plausible? Why they... That they didn't want to stick out. Ayin hara, or they want to get an extra turkey?
They want to get an extra turkey.
They want to get an extra turkey?
Yeah.
Okay. How does it look? That's what
I actually think, it was Yaakov who told them to split up, according to the Midrash.
The Midrash says it was Yaakov who told them to split up.
So I think that maybe it wasn't like the idea of Ayin hara as much as, you know, more what Tammy spoke of, like the, you know, royalty doesn't travel together. If it was Yaakov, saying, I can't afford to lose another child. Mm. Like, I want you guys to split up so that if...
Actually, he didn't say that. He didn't say, I can't lose another child.
No,
but all he said was, I can't afford to lose one child. Which child is that? The rest of you? Good luck.
But I'm wondering also, if they split them up so they couldn't have that cohesive group to make a bad decision like they made with Yosef. If they're all split up, there's no...
Because it says they each keep a room and...
Right, it's such a fascinating question. I mean, Rashi intimates that Yaakov had a new one. He had to know. He doesn't know exactly what happened to Yosef.
He must.
So maybe on the
but he knows that I sent them to them.
It was bad.
It was really bad. He knows it was bad. And he doesn't know what's going to happen when he sends his brother, when he sends all these sons to go do something again together.
So maybe that's why he wants them split.
Maybe that's why he sends.
All make that collective decision as long as they're apart. Oh, what would my brother say about it?
What? Fascinating. It's just fascinating. But what does it look like if you're Egyptian? Let's say you're not Yosef. Okay? You're Egyptian. And there are these 10 brothers who came ostensibly to buy food. But you notice them all. Like, you know, say this is Israel, right? Israel has a medical tourism. Okay? So people come all the time in order to benefit from the bounty of our country, in order to have like medical procedures. So what do you know? There's this family, and Israel notices that this family of ten brothers from Qatar.
Where?
You know Qatar is?
Qatar.
Oh. Okay, Qatar, whatever.
Where's that?
Right. Or the United Arab Emirates, so we can all... Arab Emirates. They're all entering Israel at different points. One at the Allenby Bridge, and two of them are coming in Ben Gurion, and three are coming in Eilat, and one of them's coming from Jordan.
Without computers, you wouldn't know that.
What? You wouldn't know it. But then is the state of Israel, all of a sudden some alert comes up and says, ding, 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 ding. And they're all saying, well, we're coming for medical treatment. What do we say? What does it look like?
Terrorists.
Absolutely, it looks like terrorists. That's exactly what it looks like. So now, was it intelligent for Yaakov to tell all of his sons, split up, enter the city at different areas? It was intelligent?
I think it was, because they didn't have computer systems then. And if they all came in one door, they would obviously immediately be arrested.
Arrested? Why? Everybody's coming together.
But this is a whole group.
Yeah, but they
like
look
that.
Different. They don't look like everyone else. They were
what do they need
very
to?
Mighty.
What they were,
kulam
na'im, kulam giborim.
What do you need 10 of them for? You can't send 2.
You're saying you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't?
I think so, yeah. And this was the path of least resistance, or the path of most possible safety.
Fascinating. Okay, fascinating. But what I'm saying is it looks bad. And if you're caught, now go and explain. Meaning Yosef, when he comes, Yakir Yosef, right? Yosef, or Pasuk Vav, hu ha-shalit al ha'aretz, hu ha-mashpir l'chol am ha'aretz. Right, he is the one that was mashvir. Vayavoa achei Yosef, ayishtachavu lo apayim arza. They all came and they bowed down to him. What does that sound like?
His dream.
Well, they all split up, and now they all come and they're bowing
they
down
knew
to him.
He was there, they got back together.
What happened? So, yeah. Like, one second. So, if that's true, then why did they split up?
Then the purpose was not to get.
Right. If it wasn't to get extra food, and it wasn't to, I don't know. Not be conspicuous, because they all entered in their own, you know, their different cities, and then they all met together, and then they went to the palace. Okay, ready.
Maybe they
if they were all together, Yosef would find out about it right away, and they'd be worried that they wouldn't get a chance to go and bow
out. Who's Yosef? Who do they think Yosef is? What do they think Yosef is? Remember, what the Bible we know and what they know.
I guess they knew.
They think Yosef is either...
They don't know anything yet.
They think a slave.
Or dead.
Right? Serving where? Serving in some basement somewhere, God only knows, living a horrible, miserable life, or he's dead. Okay, so why would they, if they're going to eventually come back together and bow down when they want to get their food, why did they split up? Why did they enter, according to the Midrash, in the 10 separate gates? Why would you go in 10 separate gates?
For the reasons you said.
What information?
Like to ask people that you've seen in
Yosef. Maybe they really were looking for him. Maybe that's really the reason why they split up. Okay? And that's what they say.
It wasn't their idea to split up. Right, according to...
We don't know what their idea was. I mean, we know that they were coming... According to the Pshat, they came betoch haba'im. The Pshat is sort of...
They mingled.
I think the Midrash is clearly picking up on textual nuances, right? Okay? Achei Yosef. Mehem Asara. Bitocha Baim. So it's not going to come out and say explicitly that they were looking for him. But I think implicitly, I think there's a lot of indications that that's true. And the Midrash isn't just pulling it out of a hat. That they that there is this sort of karma going on. Why are we, what, you know, and we're going to see this later. How is it that we're all ending up, all 10 of us, and not Binyamin, are getting sent down to Egypt? Right? It's just coincidence? Just coincidence that the last time that we saw our brother, we were sending him down to Egypt? You could imagine that there's a, like, what did they talk about on the way? What was their discussion? Were they, you know, like, this act that they had done, it wasn't like they had done it once and then everybody moved on with their lives. It hung over them for decades. They had lived with this knowledge and this guilt. And every time they saw their father, right? Lo neham, you know what I'm saying? So at some point, his avelut became just part of his thing. Okay, so he sat, instead of sitting in his regular chair, you could imagine, every time the family came together for dinner, right, think about it, at the table, there was a place that Dad insisted that was Yosef's place. And nobody could sit in his place. And if one of the grandchildren would sit there, we'd say, sit down, get down, get down. That's Yosef's place. Can you imagine going to a Thanksgiving dinner? Like, you know, Shabbos dinner. Knowing that every single week. And knowing that, you know, you caused that. And now all of a sudden we're going out of Egypt. What? You know?
Before the confrontation with Yosef. I'm saying from a divine or their perspective, not from that this was intended or whatever, from the matter.
I don't know, but they didn't think that they were going to confront him.
No.
I think they were hoping they would.
I'm not saying that they did it, but they said, you know what, let's all go in separate gates because guys, we each need to do a cheshbon ha-nefesh. But I'm saying that it was divinely orchestrated in that way so that by each of them coming into this place
as an individual,
it gave them that chance to introspect, to really think about what they have done, to really think about what the consequences may be.
Hmm. Okay.
And to really do tshuva, so that by the time they met with Yosef and they heard Ani Yosef, whatever, they were at that point where they could complete their tshuva process.
Well, how would they complete their tshuva process? How do you really complete it? What? Before that?
To feel complete remorse for what they did.
No, that's one thing. That's step A. What's step B? What's that? Go get him back. Right, maybe you're right, but I think that I believe that it came beforehand. That their tshuva probably, like, they were there. I don't even know if they thought about it.
They did to a point, but until they had to actually go there and confront it.
Yeah, so true. So true. Like, you know, when you have to do something that you don't want to do, so you spend a tremendous amount of mental energy trying to avoid doing that, trying to avoid confronting the fact that you're going to have to do it. Especially, like, I don't know about you, when I come to Yerik Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, like, I had to call somebody and apologize for something that I had done. And, you know, and you push it off, and you push it off, and you push it off, and you, until you finally call. And it's not as bad as it. You're like, the guy was really nice. He's like, yeah, of course I forgive you. It's fine. But like in your mind, like you're right. You definitely push off this idea of the remorse that you have and say, somehow I'll get out of it. Somehow it'll work out. Until you don't. And then you have to do it. And maybe, interesting. Okay. In a metaphysical kind of way. We'll look at it that way. So they bow down to him. Vayar Yosef et echa vayakirem. Yosef, Amman Pasuk Zayin. Yosef saw his brothers and he recognized them. Vayitnaker aleihem. Naker from the word nachri. He made himself strange to them. Okay? He disguised himself. Vayidaber itam kashot. And he spoke with them harshly. Vayomar lehem me'ayin batem. Vayomu meretz kanan lishbar ocha. He says, where are you from? And they say, from there in the Canaan. Vayaker Yosef et echa vehem lo hikiruhu. Right, immediately notice this entire pasuk is superfluous. So, answers? Suggestions? You already looked at the parshanim that I underlined?
No,
suggestions? Anyone?
I was thinking that it's one thing when you disguise yourself, but usually when you hear somebody's voice, it's sort of a giveaway.
Okay.
And we've sort of seen that along the way with Yaakov and Esau, with Abraham.
Right.
So I think just saying, you know, he disguised his look, they didn't recognize him, and then after he spoke, they still didn't recognize him.
Okay, fine, fine.
And also, in the first pasuk, it only says that Yosef recognized his brothers, but it doesn't specifically say that they didn't.
They didn't recognize him. Okay, so the first part is a superfluous. So in the Mepharshim, they don't go into this, and they don't say it's not something that's very deep. What they say is either Yosef first he recognized them as a group, but he didn't know who each one was, and then it says Vayakir, it says Vayakirim, he recognized them, like ten brothers from Canaan that all look like that. But I know those guys. You know what I'm saying? And so he disguised himself, and then it says Vayakir Yosef et Echad. And then he was like, wait, that's Reuben, that's Shimon, that's Levi. You know what I'm saying? He's like, ding, 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 ding.
So many years since he's seen them.
Correct.
So people change. They look all of a sudden.
Well, who changes? So the Rashi says, why did they recognize him? Like, he didn't know also when he came out. They didn't recognize him for two obvious reasons. The first obvious reason they didn't recognize him is?
He was older, he had a beard.
No, that's not the first obvious reason. That's right, he's the king of Egypt. He's the viceroy of Egypt. Under no circumstances would they have possibly imagined in their wildest dreams that this would be Yosef.
Out of context.
Even if he, right. The thing that you're looking for, it's so obvious. Sometimes the thing that's right in front of your face, you can't see it. Because it's just not possible. Yeah.
Could it be that he's referring to the character? Each other's character?
One second. Very good. So the second thing Rashi says is he had a beard now. He was a kid before. And now he had a full beard.
Yeah.
Right, and that's definitely true. When somebody has a full beard, anybody ever see? There's a show called Breaking Bad that I've never watched, and I don't think I'm ever going to watch. But the guy, he's the same guy from Married with Children, the father from Married with Children.
Yeah.
And he looks totally different. He just looks totally different. I would never. You don't know who this thing is, whatever. His name is.
America.
I'm sorry. Right.
It's so, a horrible Patankin. Show. You're never going to watch.
Patankin. No,
but I'm saying he's another guy. He was on The Princess Bride.
Yeah.
And he's on Homeland.
It's fascinating when
he doesn't have the same voice.
Haven't watched any of those shows. Oh, it's the voice. But I'm saying this guy looks unbelievably different. Like he shaved his head and he looks like a thug. You know what I'm saying? And he used to look clean. Like it's just different. What?
That's the point.
100%.
Professionally,
but it's the same person.
Right.
It's exactly the same person. And
no, but he also.
I look at the picture and I say, how could that be the same person?
He's speaking with harsh words. Like, uh-huh. My ayin batem is not necessarily a harsh thing to say, but the Torah feels the need to qualify the way he said it, v'daberi tam kashot, which is not the way he spoke to them when he came and told them his dream. Your tone of voice can also disguise
your
voice.
Yes.
His voice, like, you know, when you're a kid, boy's voice sounds different than when all of a sudden it's older.
Sure, 100%. You definitely do sound different.
Oh my gosh.
100%.
Who is that guy?
He's speaking. Yeah, whatever. Correct. So then they wouldn't recognize. But you would still recognize a voice, wouldn't you? Would you?
So much deeper. And
it broke.
Vehem lo ikiru. Look at Rashi. Vehem lo ikiru. So Rashi says, firstly, she yatsame etzlam below chatimat zakan. He didn't have a beard when he left. Ve'achshav matzu bechatimat zakan. And now he has a beard. Umidrash agada. This is a midrash. This is referring to what you said before. Vayakir Yosef etachav. He recognized them. Kishanim seru biyado. When he fell into their hand, when they fell into his hands, he kir shehem echav v'richem aleihem. He was compassionate to them. He could have just thrown them in jail and let them rot and go to hell. Behemlo hikiruhu kishanafal biyadam nihogbo achva. He, even as mean as he was to them, he still treated them like his brother. He sent them food. He did give them in the end what they needed. Whereas when he fell into their hands, they treated him like a stranger. They treated him horribly, as horribly as possible. Okay. So what does he do? Vayizkor Yosef et ha-chalamot asher chalam lahem. He recognized, he remembered the dreams that he dreamt. Vayomer alehem miraglim atem. You are spies. Lirot et ha'ervat ha'aretz batem. You have come to see the nakedness of the land. Meaning what?
Spies.
You're spies. How do I know you're spies?
Because you came in all different
kinds. Right, you came in all these different ways. Why would you do that? And all of a sudden, so how did they come together? Like, you know what I'm saying? Could it be that they said, okay, we're all going to have the sale of produce at the same time? It's unclear. Were they all just by themselves? Or Yosef recognized them, meaning there is like a crowd. You know what I'm saying? The sale of foodstuffs to the foreigners will take place on Wednesday between 1 and 3 p.m. Everyone has to line up, present your registration, and then we'll sell to you at that time. So it's like a big Walmart, you know what I'm saying? And they're all there at the checkout.
Wait a minute, I can't... And Yosef is actually there.
Absolutely. The Midrash says that the reason he did it for obvious reasons. He said because they very tightly controlled how much they would sell to each person. Why?
And he couldn't trust his minions?
No. Why? Well, like the food was, it was the sustenance
it's
everybody lived on.
There's power. A finite amount.
A finite amount, and they didn't want it to end up in the black market. Because if you sell too much to one person, everyone would go ahead and sell it on the black market and create ridiculous problems. Moreover, they wanted the money to stay in Egypt. Yosef was very very shrewd, right? So he controlled the prices. If he only sold you exactly how much you need, you couldn't then go sell it at a profit. He could sell the maximum amount for it. He could sell it for the maximum amount, which he did. That's what they said. Yosef himself taught the kids, why wouldn't you give it to your minions? Can you tell me why you wouldn't trust other people to do it?
But I can't imagine...
Because of course they would then go and start siphoning off food and giving it to other people.
But I can't imagine how that would physically work.
What do you mean?
I don't know, with him standing there like that and everybody...
Micromanaging?
It's spies, so maybe.
You can't imagine how that would work?
I mean, not without email and stuff.
He had spies.
I think you have... situations where like hundreds of people would wait in the courtroom to like go in to see the king or the
whatever,
and I think like they could have been milling around for days waiting for their turn.
Could be. I think that's true. That's what I'm saying. It was a huge hall, and then he was like looking around, and he's like, "Whoa, you, and that guy back there, all of you come forward." And they're like, "Oh crap!" You know what I'm saying? Like. Now what?
Or he could have just had reports. These big, beautiful men are here.
He definitely had men. There was definitely a network of watchers.
Yeah, right. You know, and told him.
Could you imagine the security problem? What?
They all looked like they were brothers.
Well, they all looked different. I don't know. Hard to know. You know what I'm saying? They all probably looked like weary, hungry, tired travelers.
That's what
right, you know, go to the airport. Just look at the airport. Go to the airport and wait online, security line in Kennedy Airport. Okay, there's like hundreds of people in this ridiculously long line, streaming through, waiting to get through security.
Especially tomorrow.
There's supposed to be weather.
Thanksgiving.
For those of you non-Americans, it's
Thanksgiving. We chefed
a
turkey last night.
Did you really? No, you did not.
So the ball taxes did as well.
Yourself?
Who did it? What?
Not with me.
You're kidding. Did you salt it? Did you pluck it and salt it and all that? How was?
You ew.
I did do it.
Who did it?
Not Daniel.
How come we didn't know about this? Sounds so fun.
Well, next year
people did it.
What?
Next year. Not to the chef thing.
Let me ask you a question.
Not to wrestle it to the ground.
How much? Who wrestled it to the ground? Sanani had to be there somewhere. Okay, how much did the turkey cost?
I don't know. We made a deal with Nafti that if he buys and chefs the turkey, Daniel will cook it.
You'll eat it. Oh, Daniel will eat it.
Well, but cooking is the easy part.
No, you got to salt. I mean, don't get me wrong.
Okay, but the oven
don't get me wrong. This is to be honest with you. It does, but it's an educational opportunity. I think, especially for our children, like, here's an animal. And now you're going to eat it. This is totally missing from us.
That's how Shira became a vegetarian.
That's fine.
Daniel wanted to take the girls and I said no.
She's a vegetarian?
That's fine.
Because she went
what do you think?
To do kaparot and she saw the whole thing. I mean, I had it from a young child.
I think that there's a very, you know, and you clean it and it has guts and you have to pluck it and then you have to salt it. You have to wash it.
In the blood.
What?
Yeah.
How often those women work.
Right. I mean, the women in the shtetl, they took the animal, they bought the bird. It took it to the shochet.
Yeah.
He slaughtered it and gave it back to you. And he said, "Here, have fun."
My mother used to do that every week.
This idea of the just malicha. We don't have our parents, our grandparents for sure. They had a salting board and these big buckets.
And
yeah. All this is lost upon us, but we digress. All this is lost upon us. So you should have included us just for the educational opportunity.
Sorry. You're right.
Reread us as me.
Yeah, 100%. And my children. They should see. They should know. I really believe it. I firmly believe it.
Read to mommy does it every year for before Pesach, so you have another opportunity.
He did a keves. He did a sheep or
my
something.
My kids wait to see that as well.
Right.
John
yeah.
Full and tucked. He wants to see it.
Jerry, I'll let it on the video.
He wants to see her.
Everybody knows about this. I can't believe it. Okay, it wasn't on the list.
Did you watch the cows?
I did watch. I went to it. If you ever see, I went. We had a guy named. We had a. We had a balabas named Sam Flat who had one of the last small slaughterhouses. His father, Moshe Flat, the slaughterhouse. Sam was running the place at the time, and we went to see them shecht the slaughter the bulls. It's a very powerful experience. It's a very powerful experience. Well, it's not hard when you have a lift. It was in Detroit. Yeah. Anyway, Yosef says. We just came for food. And obviously, what's the discussion going on between them in between? If you just came for food, why did you just come for food? Why are you coming from all these different directions? And what's their answer? What's the real answer? If we think that the answer is what we think it is, what's the real answer?
That they were looking for our
brother. We're looking for our brother. Okay? Does that sound plausible to you? I mean, how does it sound? Our brother was sold into slavery, and we're looking for him. And what's the next question? What's the next question?
Why'd you sell him?
No, not why'd you sell him.
How did he get sold?
How did he get sold into slavery, your brother? You're big guys. What happened? I don't know. We don't really know what happened to him. Really? You know what I'm saying? It's
sounds
just
like a cover story.
What?
Sounds like a good cover story.
Sounds like a bad cover story. Kulanu b'nei ish echad nachnu. We're all the sons of one person. Kenim anachnu. Lo hayinu avadecha meraglim. We are kenim. Kenim? You had a bug?
What?
In your...
In the orange.
Oh, be careful. Okay. Kenim anachnu. We are kenim. Vayomer emlo. Ki ervat kenim. Kenim are from Kananim. What does kenim mean? True. We are true. We are honest. Vayomer emlo. Sorry, you came to... It's yours also?
No, just
take that. Ah, okay. Poor Dicky. I just have to read you. He says, we're all sons of one person. There are 12 sons. One is at home and one is enenu. So what's the obvious question?
Where is he?
What happened to him? And that discussion is like, it doesn't appear in the text, but you cannot think for a moment that it didn't happen. What happened to him? I mean, if I were Yosef, I'd want to hear, really? What happened? You know what I'm saying? Just to see what they say. Okay? Vayomer Elam Yosef, Hu Asher Dibarti. So there's something missing.
That's what I said.
Right? Vayomer Elam Yosef, Hu Asher Dibarti. This is what I said. Meraglim Atem, you're spies. Hu Asher Dibarti. That's what I told you. Wait, where? So, like the Midrash, obviously, this is what the Midrash is here for, to fill in the blanks, because there's some missing conversation between the last pasuk and this pasuk. So that's exactly what I was saying. You guys are lying. And you know what the problem that the brothers have is?
Yosef knows the truth.
Right, they are lying. Because even though they're not lying that the brother is missing, what are they not doing?
They're not telling the truth.
It's obvious. So how does he know? How does this guy know? Okay? One second. So says the Midrash. Midrash says a bunch of things. Kulanu b'nei ish achar anachnu. Okay. One second. Hu asher dibarti. This is what I'm telling you. Hu asher dibarti. This is what I'm saying.
What does that mean? Hu asher dibarti.
That's what I said. That's what I said. You guys are spying. You guys are lying. Okay. Heim omrim, says the Midrash. Heim omrim. Shebao bishvil lechapes et achichem. They said, according to the Midrash, we have come to look for our brother. So then how did Yosef say you're spies? What's interesting, according to the Midrash, all this is on the table. They said what happened. They didn't say how he was lost. We lost our brother, and the reason we came in this way was to look for him. And by the way, when I saw this Midrash, it's actually explicit in the Rashi. It's a little bit, it's shocking. It sort of gives you a different perspective than what you had first thought. Because we think that they're just going along with this charade, they're trying to deny, until Yosef finally says, Ani Yosef. But according to the Midrash, kind of what Nikki said, they had done some cheshbon nefesh. They had want, like, and even before Yosef reveals himself, they're already looking for him. Okay, so this is the rest of the Midrash. Amr Lahem, He says, look, Teidusha Atem Ragdim. I'm reading the Midrash here. No, you guys are spies. Why? Shari Hare Chochim Umechazvim B'chol HaMedina. Because it's not just you came in the 10 gates. My men were watching you. And they saw you looking. You're searching. What are you looking for? Obviously, you're looking for weakness. You're spying out the country. Amru lo lo. Ach hayalanu. Umecharunuhu le'eved. We had a brother and we sold him into slavery. Avinu Yosheb Umit Abel Alav. And from that moment our father's been mourning for him. Vharadnu Vyakesep Yadenu Lomar Shabakom Makom Shanu Motsimoto Anu Podim Oto. And we came down to say we with a lot of money and we'll pay whatever it costs. And obviously, what's the obvious question then? If you feel so bad, where have you been? Why'd you wait until there was a famine if it was really such an important thing to you? Amar lehem, Adam shemecher davar yachol lachzor bo. He says, wait, you sold your brother? Once you sold him, he's gone. Can you really change your mind? Amar lo, ad shenifde oto. It's yes, he sold until we buy him back. Amar lehem, hu asher dibarti. That's what I said. Meraglim atem. Sheatem ba'im afilu laharog. What will you do? He says, what do you do if you find your brother? What if the God doesn't want to sell him back? And what they say? Well, we'll offer him a lot of money. We'll make it worth his while. He says, what if he doesn't want to sell him back? What would you do? And they said, we would do anything. We'll do what we need to do to get our brother back.
And they know the story of
Dinah. Well, they know, and he knows. Yeah. He knows. And he says, haha, anything? You're violent criminals. You are spies. So this is when the Midrash says, who are Asher Dibarti? See? You are spies. You are coming to attack us. He like tricked them into saying that they were willing to perpetrate violence, okay? And that is this is exactly what Rashi says. Rashi fills this in, okay? And then he fills in from the Midrash. What's fascinating is this in between conversation that they're saying to him, "We feel bad." They're saying to him, "We're trying to correct it," and he's the brother. So then, why doesn't he reveal himself if they're trying to correct it? If they're really trying to, and they're really expressing.
He wants to see that they really regret it.
Well, aren't they here? Aren't they, what are they doing? Aren't they looking? We must attest them. Okay, so there's an extensive discussion. Why doesn't he reveal himself? I thought this whole thing is just a fascinating perspective that we don't often get about the brother's remorse and how they're stuck between a rock and a hard place.
Rashi doesn't say that they said they sold him.
What?
Rashi doesn't say that they said
he doesn't include that little tidbit.
He doesn't include that.
Right, right. The different versions of the Midrash.
Or Rashi shifting, morphing the Midrash to fit into the Pshat.
Which is?
That the brothers don't admit to anything until much later on.
Right. Right.
Because if the brothers would admit right now, it kind of messes up the whole story a little bit, because it paints Yosef in a little bit of a bad light, and we strung them along.
Correct. If Rina's right, and Rashi is trying to say that they don't reveal, that would explain why Yosef... He wants to bring out their remorse. But if they express remorse now, why does he keep going along? So you could look at Ramban. Ramban says that he wants the dreams to be fulfilled. Right. Kliyakar has a different perspective. Kliyakar has a very fascinating perspective. Okay. You have an issue?
With Ramban.
Okay.
He wants the dreams to be fulfilled.
If you look at Kliyakar and Pasuk Zayin, and with this we'll finish. It says Kliyakar. If you have Kli Akar on Pasuk Zayin, there's a first paragraph and then Behine, and the answer starts with the Hanira Li Baze. It's about, I don't know, 10 lines, 15 lines down, Hanira Li Baze. You find it? I don't think you have Kli Akar? It's in Tammy's one on the page down here, Tafshin Pei Aleph, Hanira Li Baze, the top of the column, Tafshin Pei Aleph.
Over here, Bakram.
1 second. Yes, let's skip down. One second. Where does he continue? Yeah. Here, the top of the page near Ali Bazet, the top of the column on the right hand side. See on page one, what are you, 530?
530.
Look at page 530. Mamash, the top of the column. Vanir Ali Bazet? See? Okay, Vanir Ali Bazet. Ken, for you, it's right here. Right there. Okay? Near Ali Bazet.
I know.
Mashalo Gila La Aviv Adayin Kihu Chai. Why didn't he reveal to his father? I mean, it was one thing to torment the brothers. What about the father? Lefisha Chashav, he said, "Im Hakadosh Baruch Hu lo gila lo." If God hasn't told him, "Im ken batzal Hakadosh Baruch Hu b'tzaro." I mean, you're not talking with any God. is Yaakov Avinu in Eretz Canaan. He talks to God, literally. So if God didn't tell him, then he's not going to tell him. God wanted his father to suffer for 22 years for what he did. What did the father do?
Tricked.
22 years. Why? He was away from his father for 22 years. So therefore, Yosef must have assumed that. Okay? And Yosef, I mean, who am I to tell God what to do? If God doesn't want to tell them, then fine. So why did he cause pain to his brothers? Asa kol ze lemareg avonam b'ma shemachu acheihem. He did it, he caused them suffering in order lemareg avonam, to dissipate their sin. And the fact that they sold their brother, the gadol avonam minso. Their sin is too great to bear. Mitzrichim miruk yisurim mida keneged mida. They need to suffer. They need to be atoned. Their sin is too great to bear. They created such a rift in the space-time continuum, as it were, that they have to pay. They have to suffer somewhat. You don't just clean this up. And if they don't suffer now, they're going to suffer later on. Okay? And he goes on and he explains, it's fascinating to read into the Kli Yakar, why he did some of the things that he did, and to correspond to some of the things that they did. But we should just understand, in the Midrash, in the eyes of Chazal, the sin that the brothers do creates such a cosmic rift, as it were, such a tear in the positive energy of Klal Yisrael, that we pay for this sin, that this sin is held on our account until many, many years later. Anybody know when? Anyone know? You never heard this?
Yeah,
nope. Much later than that. You've all read it many times. Okay? Much, much, much later. You read it in the Asara Harugei Malchut. The 10 rabbis, the 10 great Jewish leaders who are executed in Asara Harugei Malchut. The 10 martyrs.
They always say that so fast
and so on. In Eile Ezkera. Let me see if I can find it. You're saying? You're leaving. Okay. In Eile Ezkera, when they do the Asara Harugei Malchut, and this will stop. It's fascinating. In seconds. Okay. Eile Ezkera. What happened when this is obviously a Midrash's story, because really the 10 martyrs were killed over the period of a century historically. But in the piyut of Eile Ezkera, which we say ridiculously fast, it's just read in English next time. It appears both on Yom Kippur and on Tisha B'Av. Okay? One second. When they taught the Torah to the Roman emperor, Hevin v'dikdek b'dat b'shumat, he started reading the Torah. U'patach b've'ela ha'mishpatim. He read Ve'ela Mishpatim, and what does it say there? Gonev ish mecharo v'nimsa b'yado. If you kidnap someone and sell him, what's the punishment? Mojumat. What did he do? Gava lev b'liya'al oved elidim. This idolater, he had haughtiness in his heart. V'tzival l'malot platerona alayim. He commanded to fill his palace with shoes. Just this image of palace filled with shoes, what does that do for you today? Right. V'kara la'asarach chamim gedolim. And he called 10 wise men, b'vinei dat. Dino mishpat zeh la'ashiro, v'al ta'avteh b'chazav la'amro. Tell me, what is the rule about this person? Kiim hotziu la'amito ulo'ro. I want you to tell me the truth about this rule. Kiim atzeh ish gonev nefesh me'echa v'bnei Yisrael v'damer bo umachro. What is the rule about someone who kidnaps his co-fellow Jew and sells him? Heim ke'anulo u'mei taganav ha'hu. They say, okay, the ganav, the kidnapper, should be punished with death. Nam, so he said, ayei avotechem asher achechem mecharuhu. Where are your forefathers who sold their brother, Lorachat Yishma'ilim Sicharuhu? They sold him to a band of Yishma'ilim, Uba'adna Alayim Nitanuhu. What did they sell him for? According to the Midrash?
Shoes.
Oh, we only have shoes, we'll take it. The shoes come back. And if you think it's just then, the shoes, we don't know, you know. Okay? Va'atem kiblu din shamayim aleichem. You, you must accept the din of Shamayim. Ki mimei avotechem lo nimtza lachem. And since the days of your forefathers, there's no ten like you. V'im hayu b'chayim hayiti dam lifneihem. If those brothers were alive, I would judge them. V'atem tisu avon avotechem. You shall bear the sin of your fathers. This idea of the Kli Yakar, it's based on halachic literature, midrashic literature. The sin of the selling of Yosef created a break, created a blemish, a shever. Very good, very good. That was not repaired. And I don't know if it was repaired in the Asarau Gemalchut, and history would indicate that we just paid for it. We were still paying for it. You can't do something like that and not have it reverberate for the rest of history.
Ad kedekach.
Yosef knew that as well. All right, we'll stop.